Is there anything so cozy at Christmas time as nestling in by the fireside with a good book? Tonight, we bring that book to your hearth on FM 91 in a program that is locally and lovingly produced for this holiday season, especially for the young ones who sleeplessly await Christmas morning, and for the young at heart who are simply seeking food for the soul. We're inviting you into the magic of these charming, family-friendly tales as they are intertwined with Christmas carols, classical music, and even some familiar voices from WGTE. I'm your narrator, Mary Claire Murphy, and this year's edition of Season's Readings from FM 91 features a selection of short stories from the Storyteller Collection by Maud Lindsay. We begin with a preface from Lindsay, which then leads us into the first tale, The Two Brothers. Thank you for joining WGTE for The Storyteller. It was a glad day in the olden time when the storyteller came to cottage or hall. At Christmas or New Year, when the maple stood on the village green or the chestnuts were roasting in the coals on All Hallows' Eve. Come when he would, he was always welcome. And if, when he was least expected, he knocked at the door, what joy there was! Many were the miles that the storyteller had traveled, and many were the places where he had been. And many were the tales he had to tell of what he had seen and what he had heard in the wide world. Sometimes his voice was deep and sweet as the organ in church on Sunday. And sometimes, as the tale went on, he would take the harp, which was ever by his side, and touching it with skillful fingers would weave a gay little song or a tender strain of music into his story like a jeweled thread in a golden web. All the children gathered around him, sturdy Gilbert and rosy Jocelyn, roguish Giles and slender Rosalind, eager for a story. Mother and father drew near, and in the background stood the servants, smiling but silent. Oh, everything was still as the house at midnight as the storyteller began his magic words. Once upon a time. Perhaps the story brought with it laughter, or perhaps a tear, but life, said the storyteller, is made up of smiles and tears. And the little ones, listening to him, learned to rejoice with those whose joy was great, and to mourn with the sorrowful, and were the better and not the worse for it, and so in due time grew into noble men and good women. It is many and many a year since they lived and died, but still, knock, 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 the storyteller comes with his harp and his story to every child's heart today. Open the door and let him come in. Give him a seat by the fire and gather close about him, and then you shall hear. Once upon a time, there lived two brothers, who when they were children were so seldom apart that those who saw one always looked for the other at his heels. But when they had grown into manhood, and the time had come when they must make their own fortunes, the elder brother said to the younger,
"Choose as you will what you shall do, and God bless your choice. But as for me, I shall make haste to the court of the king, for nothing will satisfy me but to serve him and my country."
"Good fortune and a blessing go with you,"
said the younger brother.
"I too should like to serve my country and the king, but I have neither words nor wit for a king's court. To hammer a shoe from the glowing iron while the red fire roars and the anvil rings, this is the work that I do best, and I shall be a blacksmith, even as my father was before me."
So when he had spoken, the two brothers embraced and bade each other goodbye and went on their ways, nor did they meet again till many a year had come and gone. The elder brother rode to the king's court just as he said he would. And as time went on, he won great honor there and was made one of the king's counselors. and the younger brother built himself a blacksmith's shop by the side of the road and worked there merrily from early morn till the stars shone at night. He was called the Mighty Blacksmith because of his strength, and the Honest Blacksmith because he charged no more than his work was worth, and the Master Blacksmith because no other smith in the countryside could shoe a horse so well and speedily as he. And he was envious of nobody, for always as he worked, his hammer seemed to sing to him. Now in those days, news came to the king of the country where the two brothers lived, that the duke of the next kingdom had made threats against him and against his people, and there was great excitement in the land. Some of the king's counselors wanted him to gather his armies and march at once into the duke's kingdom. "If we do not make war upon him, he will make war upon us," they said. But some of the king's counselors loved peace, and among these was the elder brother, in whom the king had great trust.
"Let me, I pray you, ride to the duke's castle, that we may learn from his own lips if he is friend or foe. For much is told that is not true, and it is easier to begin a fight than it is to end one."
The king was well pleased with all the elder brother said, and bade him go.
"But if by the peal of the noon bells on the day before Christmas you have neither brought nor sent a message of good will from the duke to me, then shall those who want war have their way."
And with this, the elder brother had to be content. Day and night he rode to the duke's castle, and day and night when his errand was done, he hastened home again. But the way was long, and a strong wind had blown away the signposts which guided travelers, so though he stopped neither to sleep in a bed or eat at a table the whole journey through, the early hours of the day before Christmas found him still far from the king's palace. And to make matters worse, in the loneliest part of the road, the good horse that had carried him so well lost a shoe.
"Alack and alas, for the want of a nail. The horseshoe is lost, and my good horse will fail. For the want of the shoe, and I shall be late. For want of a steed, and my message must wait. For want of a bearer, and woe is our plight. For want of the message, the king needs must fight,"
cried the elder brother then. And he bowed his head upon his saddle and wept, for where to turn for help he did not know. The sun had not yet risen, and no other traveler was on the road, nor could he see, through the dim light of dawn, a house or watchtower where he might ask aid. But as he wept, he heard a distant sound that was sweeter than music to his ears.
"Only a blacksmith plays that tune,"
he cried, and he urged his horse on joyfully, calling as he went,
"Smith, Smith, if you love country and king, shoe my horse and shoe him speedily."
It was not long before he spied the fire of a roadside smithy glaring out upon him like a great red eye, and when he reached the door of the shop, he found the smith ready and waiting for his task. Cling, clang, cling, how the iron rang beneath his mighty stroke. And cling, clang, cling, how the hammer sang as the shoe was pounded into shape. By the time the sun was over the hill, the horse was shod and the rider was in his saddle again. But the blacksmith would take no money for his work.
"To serve my country and the king is pay enough for me,"
he said, and he stood up straight and tall and looked the king's counselor in the eyes. And lo and behold, as the morning light fell on their faces, each saw that the other was his brother.
"God bless you, brother. God speed you, brother,"
was all they had time to say, but that was enough to show that love was still warm in their hearts. Then away and away and away, through the sun and the dew rode the elder brother, away and away over hill and dale toward the king's palace. The king and his counselors were watching and waiting there. As the sun climbed high and the message did not come, those who wanted war said, "Shall we not saddle our horses and call upon our men?" The bells in the steeple have yet to ring for noon, said the peace lovers, and we see a dust on the king's highway. Dust flies before wind, said the warriors, and it is likelier that our messenger lies in the duke's prison than rides on the king's highway. But with the dust came the sound of flying hoofs. Faster, faster, faster they came. When the first stroke of the noon hour pealed from the church steeple, the king's messenger was in sight, and the last bell had not rung when he stood before the palace gate to deliver the duke's message.
Peace and goodwill to you and yours, and to all, a Merry Christmas.
Then the king sent for fine robes and a golden chain to be brought for the elder brother, and put a purse of gold in his hand, for he was well pleased with what he had done. But the elder brother would have none of these things for himself alone.
Try as I would, I must have failed if it had not been for my brother, the blacksmith, who shod my horse on the road today. And if it please your majesty, half of all you give to me I will give to him. Two good servants are better than one,
said the king, and he sent for the younger brother that he might thank him also. Then the two brothers were clothed alike and feasted alike, and each had a purse of gold, and whenever one was praised, so was the other. And they lived happily, each in his own work, all the days of their lives. That was the first in a series of short stories to warm the heart this holiday season. The Tale of Two Brothers, from The Storyteller by Maud Lindsay. Thanks to Kari Marshall for voicing the brothers and the king, and to the WGTE personnel we'll hear chiming in throughout the next several tales. In order of appearance, Sophia Fisher, Logan Cooney, Carolyn Anderson, Derek Strelo, Moira Calicota, Kathy Gamenza, Angel Dennis, Brad Cresswell, Savannah Flowers, and Mark Martinez. For more detailed credits, we invite you to visit our webpage for Seasons Readings from FM 91. That's online at WGTE.org. The storyteller awaits us now with an anecdote about a young prince who's determined to give his mother a Christmas gift that proves more meaningful than any silver or gold or glittering jewels. This is the Jar of Rosemary. There was once a little prince whose mother, the queen, was sick. All summer long she lay in bed, and everything was kept quiet in the palace. But when the autumn came, she grew better. Every day brought color to her cheeks and strength to her limbs. And by, the little prince was allowed to go into her room and stand beside her bed to talk to her. He was very glad of this, for he wanted to ask her what she would like for a Christmas present. And as soon as he kissed her and laid his cheek against hers, he whispered his question in her ear.
"What should I like for a Christmas present?"
said the queen.
"A smile and a kiss and a hug around the neck. These are the dearest gifts I know."
But the prince was not satisfied with this answer.
"Smiles and kisses and hugs you can have every day,"
he said.
"But think, mother, think. If you could choose the thing you wanted most in all the world, what would you take?"
So the queen thought, and thought, and at last she said,
"If I might take my choice of all the world, I believe a little jar of rosemary, like that which bloomed in my mother's window when I was a little girl, would please me better than anything else."
The little prince was delighted to hear this, and as soon as he had gone out of the queen's room, he sent a servant to his father's greenhouses to inquire for a rosemary plant. But the servant came back with disappointing news. There were carnation pinks in the king's greenhouses, and roses with golden hearts and lovely lilies. But there was no rosemary, Rosemary was a common herb and grew mostly in country gardens, so the king's gardeners said.
"Then go into the country for it,"
said the little prince.
"No matter where it grows, my mother must have it for a Christmas present."
So messengers went into the country, here, there, and everywhere, to seek the plant. But each one came back with the same story to tell. There was rosemary enough to spare in the spring, but the frost had been in the country and there was not a green sprig left to bring to the little prince for his mother's Christmas present. Two days before Christmas, however, news was brought that the rosemary had been found, a lovely green plant growing in a jar right in the very city where the prince himself lived.
"But where is it?"
said he.
"Why have you not brought it with you? Go and get it at once."
"Well, as for that,"
said the servant who had found the plant,
"there is a little difficulty. The old woman to whom the rosemary belongs did not want to sell it, even though I offered her a handful of silver for it."
"Then give her a purse of gold,"
said the little prince. So a purse filled so full of gold that it could not hold another piece was taken to the woman. But presently it was brought back. She would not sell her rosemary, no, not even for a purse of gold.
"Perhaps if your little highness would go yourself and ask her, she might change her mind,"
said the prince's nurse. So the royal carriage, drawn by 6 white horses, was brought, and the little prince and his servants rode away to the old woman's house. And when they got there, the first thing they spied was the little green plant in a jar standing in the old woman's window. The old woman herself came to the door, and she was glad to see the little prince. She invited him in and bade him warm his hands by the fire and gave him a cookie from her cupboard to eat. She had a little grandson, no older than the prince, but he was sick and could not run about and play like other children. He lay in a little white bed in the old woman's room, and the little prince, after he had eaten the cookie, spoke to him and took out his favorite plaything, which he always carried in his pocket, and showed it to him. The prince's favorite plaything was a ball, which was like no other ball that had ever been made. It was woven of magic stuff, as bright as sunlight, as sparkling as starlight, and golden as the moon at harvest time. And when the little prince threw it into the air, or bounced it on the floor, or turned it in his hands, it rang like a chime of silver bells. The sick child laughed to hear it, and held out his hands for it, and the prince let him hold it, which pleased the grandmother as much as the child. But pleased though she was, she would not sell the rosemary. She had brought it from the home where she had lived when her little grandson's father was a boy, she said, and she hoped to keep it till she died. So the prince and his servants had to go home without it. No sooner had they gone than the sick child began to talk of the wonderful ball.
"If I had such a ball to hold in my hand,"
he said,
"I would be contented all the day."
"You may as well wish for the moon in the sky,"
said his grandmother. But she thought of what he had said, and in the evening when he was asleep, she put her shawl around her, and taking the jar of rosemary with her, she hastened to the king's palace. When she got there, the servants asked her errand, but she would answer nothing till they had taken her to the little prince.
"Silver and gold would not buy the rosemary,"
she said when she saw him.
"But if you will give me your golden ball for my little grandchild, you may have the plant."
"But my ball is the most wonderful ball that was ever made,"
cried the little prince.
"And it is my favorite plaything. I would not give it away for anything."
And so the old woman had to go home with her jar of rosemary under her shawl. The next day was the day before Christmas, and there was a great stir and bustle in the palace. The The queen's physician had said she might sit up to see the Christmas tree that night and have her presence with the rest of the family, and everyone was running to and fro to get things in readiness for her. The queen had so many presents, and very fine they were, too, that the Christmas tree could not hold them all, so they were put on a table before the throne and wreathed around with holly and with pine. The little prince went in with his nurse to see them and to put his gift, which was a jewel, among them.
"She wanted a jar of rosemary,"
he said as he looked at the glittering heap.
"She will never think of it again when she sees these things. You may be sure of that,"
said the nurse. But the little prince was not sure. He thought of it himself many times that day, and once when he was playing with his ball, he said to the nurse,
"If I had a rosemary plant, I'd be willing to sell it for a purse full of gold, wouldn't you?"
"Indeed, yes,"
said the nurse.
"And so would anyone else in his right senses. You may be sure of that."
The little boy was not satisfied, though, and presently, when he had put his ball up and stood at the window, watching the snow which had come to whiten the earth for Christ's birthday, he said to the nurse,
"I wish it were spring. It is easy to get rosemary then, is it not?"
"Your little highness is like the king's parrot that knows but one word with your rosemary, rosemary, rosemary,"
said the nurse, who was a little out of patience by that time.
"Her majesty the queen only asked for it to please you. You may be sure of that."
But the little prince was not sure. And when the nurse had gone to her supper and he was left by chance for a moment alone, he put on his coat of fur, and taking the ball with him, he slipped away from the palace and hastened toward the old woman's house. He had never been out at night by himself before, and he might have felt a little afraid had it not been for the friendly stars that twinkled in the sky above him. "We will show you the way," they seemed to say, and he trudged on bravely in their light, till by and by he came to the house and knocked at the door. Now, the little sick child had been talking of the wonderful ball all the evening.
"Did you see how it shone, Grandmother? And did you hear how the little bells rang?"
he said, and it was just then that the little prince knocked at the door. The old woman made haste to answer the knock, and when she saw the prince, she was too astonished to speak.
"Here is the ball,"
he cried, putting it into her hands.
"Please give me the rosemary for my mother."
And so it happened that when the queen sat down before her great table of gifts, the first thing she spied was a jar of sweet rosemary, like that which had bloomed in her mother's window when she was a little girl.
"I should rather have it than all the other gifts in the world,"
she said. And she took the little prince in her arms and kissed him. This is Season's Readings from FM 91, holiday tales for you and your family, along with our warmest wishes to you from WGTE. We're featuring tonight a selection of short stories from The Storyteller by Maud Lindsay, including The Jar of Rosemary, and now The Promise, which tells of a musician who withstands the pressures of court and the perils of nature to make it home in time for Christmas with his family. There was once a harper who played such beautiful music and sang such beautiful songs that his fame spread throughout the whole land. And at last the queen heard of him and sent messengers to bring him to the palace.
I will neither eat nor sleep till I have seen your face and heard the sound of your harp.
This was the message the queen sent to the harper. The messengers said it over and over until they knew it by heart. And when they reached the harper's house, they called out,
"Hail, harper! Come out and listen, for we have something to tell you that will make you glad."
But when the harper heard the queen's message, he was sad, for he had a wife and a child and a little brown dog, and he was sorry to leave them, and they were sorry to have him go. "Stay with us," they begged, but the harper said,
"I must go, for it would be discourtesy to disappoint the queen, but as sure as holly berries are red and pine is green, I will come back by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside."
And when he had promised this, he hung his harp upon his back and went away with the messengers to the queen's palace. And when he got there, the queen welcomes him with joy, and many things were done in his honor. He slept on a bed of softest down and ate from a plate of gold at the queen's own table. And when he sang, everybody and everything, from the queen herself to the mouse in the palace pantry, stood still to listen. What he was doing, however, feasting or resting or singing or listening to praises, he never forgot the promise that he had made to his wife and his child and his little brown dog. And when the day before Christmas came, he took his harp in his hand and went to bid the queen goodbye. Now the queen was loath to have the harper leave her, and she said to him,
"I will give you a horse that is white as milk, as glossy as satin, as fleet as a deer, if you will stay and play and sing before my throne on Christmas Day."
But the harper answered,
"I cannot stay, for I have a wife and a child and a little brown dog, and I have promised them to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside."
Then the queen said,
"If you will stay and play and sing before my throne on Christmas Day, I will give to you a wonderful tree that summer or winter is never bare, and silver and gold will fall for you whenever you shake this little tree."
But the harper said,
"I must not stay, for my wife and my child and my little brown dog are waiting for me, and I have promised them to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside."
Then the queen said,
"If you will stay on Christmas Day, one tune to play and one song to sing, I will give you a velvet robe to wear, and you may sit beside me here with a ring on your finger and a crown on your head."
But the harper answered,
"I will not stay, for my wife and my child and my little brown dog are watching for me, and I have promised them to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside."
And he wrapped his old cloak about him and hung his harp upon his back and went out from the queen's palace without another word. He had not gone far when the little white snowflakes came fluttering down from the skies.
"Harper, stay,"
they seemed to say.
"Do not venture out today."
The snow may fall, but I must go, for I have a wife and a child and a little brown dog, and I have promised them to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside.
Then the snow fell thick, and the snow fell fast. The hills and the valleys, the hedges and hollows were white. The paths were all hidden, and there were drifts like mountains on the king's highway. The harper stumbled, and the harper fell, but he would not turn back. And as he traveled, he met the wind.
Brother Harper, turn, I pray. Do not journey on today,
sang the wind, but the harper would not heed.
Snows may fall and winds may blow, but I must go on, for I have a wife and a child and a little brown dog, and I have promised them to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside.
Then the wind blew an icy blast. The snow froze on the ground, and the water froze in the rivers. The harper's breath froze in the air, and icicles as long as the king's sword hung from the rocks on the king's highway. The harper shivered, and the harper shook, but he would not turn back, and by he came to the forest that lay between him and his home. The trees of the forest were creaking and bending in the wind, and every one of them seemed to say,
"Darkness gathers, night is near. Harper, stop! Don't venture here."
But the harper would not stop.
"Snows may fall, winds may blow, and night may come, but I have promised to be at home by Christmas Day to eat my share of the Christmas pudding and sing the Christmas songs by my own fireside. I must go on."
And on he went till the last glimmer of daylight faded and there was darkness everywhere. But the harper was not afraid of the dark.
"If I cannot see, I can sing,"
said he. And he sang in the forest joyously.
"Sing glory, 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 and bless God's holy name. For 'twas on Christmas morning the little Jesus came."
The snow ceased its falling. The wind ceased its blowing. The trees of the forest bowed down to listen. And lo, dear children, as he sang, the darkness turned to a wondrous light, and close at hand, the harper saw the open doorway of his home. The wife and the child and the little brown dog were watching and waiting, and they welcomed the harper with great joy. The holly berries were red in the Christmas wreaths. Their Christmas tree was a young green pine. The Christmas pudding was full of plums, and the harper was happier than a king as he sat by his own fireside to sing.
"God bless us all for Jesus' sake this happy Christmas Day."
God bless us all for Jesus' sake this happy Christmas Day. The Promise, A Christmas Wonder Story for Children. That was just one in a garland of short stories in the Storyteller Collection by Maud Lindsay. Now add an extra pinch of fairy dust and an epic transformation, and suddenly the bleak midwinter doesn't seem quite so bleak. This is the tale of the magic flower for Seasons Readings from FM 91. Once upon a time, there lived a wee woman whose bit of a garden was a delight to all eyes. Such flowers as she had, and in the midst of them, green as emerald and smooth as velvet, was a grass plot with never a weed upon it. And through the grass ran a garden walk as white as snow. Everyone who saw it declared there was no prettier garden in the king's country, and what they said was no more than what was true. Early and late, the wee woman worked to keep her garden fair and lovely. But in spite of all her care, whenever the east wind blew, it brought with it a whirl of trash from the neighbor's dooryard and scattered it among her flowers. Alack and alas, what a dooryard was that! Except for the trash that was always upon it, it was as bare as the palm of your hand, and there was a heap of dirt and ashes as high as a hillock in front of the door. Everybody who passed it turned their eyes away from it, for there was no uglier spot in the king's country, and that was nothing but the truth of it. Whenever the wee woman looked from her windows or walked in her garden, she saw the dooryard, and many was the day when she said to herself,
"I wish I were 1,000 miles away from it."
And if she made up her mind, as sometimes she did, that she would trouble no more about it, the east wind was sure to come with a whirl of its trash. Oh, it seemed as if she were always cleaning because of that dooryard. And what to do about it, she did not know. She puzzled and planned. She wished and she worked, but she had come to the end of her wits when, one day, her fairy godmother came to see her.
"Never fret,"
said the godmother when she had heard the trouble.
"In your own garden grows a magic flower that can set things right, and if you will only tend it and watch it and wait long enough, you shall see what you shall see."
And when she had pointed out the flower, she went on her way, leaving the wee woman much comforted. She tended the flower and watched it and waited to see what she should see. And while she was watching and waiting, the flower burst into bloom, the loveliest bloom. Every blossom was as rosy as the little clouds at sunrise. And the wee woman's garden was more beautiful than before because of them. Then said everyone who passed by,
"'Tis the prettiest garden in the king's country."
And what they said was no more than what was true. But as for the neighbor's dooryard, it was as bare and ugly as ever. The heap of dirt and ashes grew larger every day, and whenever the wind blew from the east, it brought a whirl of its trash into the wee woman's garden, just as it had always done. The wee woman looked each morning to see if the magic of the flower had begun to work, but morning after morning, nothing changed.
It is long waiting and weary watching for magic things to work,
said she to herself. But because of what her fairy godmother had told her, she tended the flower from day to day and hoped in her heart that something might come of it yet. By and by, the blossoms of the flower faded and fell. And after them came the seed. Hundreds and hundreds of feathery seed there were, and one day, the wind from the west came by and blew them away in a whirl over the fence and into the neighbor's dooryard. No one saw them go. Not even the wee woman knew what had become of them. And as for the dooryard, it was as ugly as ever, with its ash heap and its trash. Everybody who passed it turned their eyes away from it. The wee woman herself would look at it no longer.
I will look at the magic flower instead,
she said to herself, and so she did. Early and late, she tended the plant and worked to make her garden fair and lovely, but she kept her eyes from the dooryard. And if the wind from the east blew trash among her flowers, she raked it away and burned it up and troubled no more about it. Summer slipped into autumn, and autumn to winter, and the flowers slept. But at the first peep of spring, the wee woman's garden budded and bloomed once more. And one day as she worked there with her back to the dooryard, she heard passers-by call out in delight.
Of all the gardens in the king's country, there are none so pretty as these two.
And when she looked around in surprise to see what they meant, she saw that the neighbor's dooryard was full of flowers. Hundreds and hundreds of lovely blossoms, every one as rosy as the little clouds at sunrise. They covered the heap of dirt and ashes. They clustered about the doorstone, they filled the corners, and in the midst of them was the neighbor, raking and cleaning as busily as if she were the wee woman herself.
"'Tis fine weather for flowers,"
said she, nodding and smiling at the wee woman.
"The finest in the world,"
said the wee woman, and she nodded and smiled too, for she knew that the magic flower had done its work. The storyteller's been spinning tales for us all evening, that last one being The Magic Flower, from a book of short stories by Maud Lindsay. And there's one more quest in store for Seasons Readings from FM 91. This one's a journey of bravery as three travelers set out to see the wonders of the King's House Beautiful, only to find lions in the way. Once upon a time, three friends set out to go to the palace of the king, which was known as the House Beautiful. The king himself had invited them there, and that they might have no trouble in finding the way, he sent to them a scroll upon which the path was marked so plainly that it would have been a hard matter to have missed it. And to make assurance doubly sure, he wrote upon the scroll with his own hand, bidding them to keep the path.
Turn neither to the right nor to the left,
his message said,
but follow the path, and it will lead you safely to the House Beautiful, where I have prepared a place for you.
All their lives, the three friends had heard of the wonders of the king's house. Some people said that it was built of gold, bright as the sun itself. And others, that it was made of gleaming pearl. Its windows were said to overlook the whole world, and its towers to reach higher than the sky. And everyone agreed that there was not within its gates, but peace and joy. So eager were the friends to see it that they could not journey fast enough to satisfy themselves, and from morning until night they urged each other on. The path by which they were to go was a narrow path, with a rough place now and then, and now and then a briar or a sharp stone upon it, but for the most part it was a pleasant way. The travelers hastened joyfully along it, and all went well with them, until one day they met a man whose face was turned towards the land from which they had just come.
"Good neighbors,"
he cried,
"why travel you so fast? Is a house afire or a friend ill? Or does a feast wait till you come? Tell me, I pray you, that I may sorrow with you, or rejoice, as your need may be."
"Oh, rejoice, rejoice," cried the three. "For we journey to the king's house beautiful, where a place is prepared for us." But when the man heard this, he shook his head sorrowfully, as if what they told him was grievous news indeed.
"I, too, had thought of going there, but that was before I knew of the lions in the way."
"Lions in the way!" cried the travelers, looking at each other with startled eyes.
"Aye, lions,"
repeated the man solemnly.
"The fiercest and largest that man ever saw. Their very roaring shakes the ground, and many a traveler have been devoured by them." "As for myself, I have not seen them. To hear of them is enough for me."
"And for me,"
said one of the travelers, and in spite of all her companions might do or say to persuade her, she would go no farther.
"The king's house may be as beautiful as the morning, and as full of wonders as the sky is full of stars. But what good will it be to me if I am eaten by lions?"
said she, and her friends were forced to journey on without her. As they went, they talked of the lions in the way, and one said to the other,
"Think you it is true, or but an idle tale?"
"True or not, we shall pass in safety. Have we not the king's own word for it?"
said the other, and she led the way with such great strides that her friend could scarcely keep pace with her. On and on they traveled, without stop or hindrance, till all at once the air was filled with a great noise that shook the earth beneath their feet and set their knees to trembling. There was no mistaking what it was. Even though they had never heard the sound before, they knew it was the roaring of lions. And the second traveler began to grow afraid.
"Let us go around by another way. Surely there are more paths than one to the king's house."
And though the other spread out before her the scroll on which the path was marked and read once more the message of the king,
"Turn neither to the right nor to the left, but follow the path, and it will lead you safely to the house beautiful, where I have prepared a place for you."
She would pay no heed to it, but turned away into a bypath and followed it out of sight. The other traveler was forced to journey on the path alone, with the roaring of lions in her ears and the shaking of the earth beneath her feet. nor had she gone a furlong more when just ahead she spied the lions themselves. One on each side of the path, they stood with flaming eyes and yawning mouths, and at the very sight of them the traveler's heart beat quick and sharp, and her feet faltered upon the way. But her faith in the king's word was greater than her fear.
Oh, falter not, O feet! Fear not, O heart! There's safety in the path, there has to be. The king himself has said it.
She cried, and she pressed on. And lo and behold, when she came to the lions, she found that they were chained. Roar as they might, and strive as they would, they could not touch those who walked in the path that the king had marked. And the traveler passed in safety. Beyond the lions stood the House Beautiful, with walls of gold bright as the sun itself, and gates of gleaming pearl. Its windows overlooked the world, its towers reached above the sky, and of its wonders, not the half had ever been told her. The traveler's place was prepared for her, and the king was waiting to welcome her to his house. And so she lived there, in peace and joy forever after. With that, after the tale of the lions in the way, we close Maud Lindsay's book, The Storyteller. But you can stream it again on demand and view the voice acting credits by visiting Seasons Readings from FM 91. That's on our website, wgte.org. I'm Mary Claire Murphy, your narrator and producer, and on behalf of everyone here at WGTE, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Season's readings from FM 91 is made possible in part by listeners like you. Thank you.